digital signals already on the air, ready to be listened to. So maybe that answers some of your questions, Bill. Go to VCC UK, KQRIW.
VCC QIQ.
Stand by a minute there, Bill. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, Dick, I think one of the other questions he was asking is that what would you actually hear on an analog VHF television set? And I don't think you'd hear much of anything in that area just because the channel frequencies have changed as well. From what I understand, the channels range from 2 to 13. It's going to go up for auction, and that'll be used for other things. So basically, the new television spectrum is not back to you, Dick, KQ2QIQ.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that 2 through 13 is going to go for auction immediately. There are a number of places in the United States that have already been given dispensation where the 2 through 13 frequency bands will continue to be used in those areas. I'm not sure if they're rural areas or what, but there are certain areas that will continue to use those frequencies. The frequencies that are going up for auction are the ones above 800 megacycles. I think it's, or is it above 700? I think it's from 700 to 800. It's going to go up for auction. The first responders are quite possibly going to be the ones that are going to get that, the first responder emergency services. So auctions will take place, but it's UHF channels that are going to be auctioned at first. I'm a little skeptical as to whether the VHF channels are going to be auctioned in the beginning. And even if they are, they're only going to be auctioned in certain areas of the country at first. So some form of VHF television, I think, is going to exist for some time. But it's going to, in our area, not be analog anymore. It's going to become digital. Let's see. Was it Bill that had some? Yeah, Bill, I think, had a further question. Go ahead, Bill.
WB2BXO.
BXO recognized, but Bill's got it first.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, I guess you answered my question. I was just kind of curious with some of the older sets I have if I'll be able to see anything or hear anything. And I did get the coupons for the converter boxes, so I'll probably pick up a pair of converter boxes. Plus, I have the Verizon Fios, and they sent me two free converter boxes for the TVs that I don't use their set-top boxes with. I get regular analog cable that comes before it goes into their box, and out of their box comes digital, I guess, it's converted. So they told me that as long as I have a set-top box, I won't have to do any conversion, but I do have a couple of sets just hooked up to the raw cable that comes out of their Fios box, you know, the fiber optic box. And I only get maybe 20 channels. So and they're supposed to change this month to all digital. So I'll have to see when I turn one of the sets on, it's not hooked up to the box. When I get nothing, then I know I'll have to hook the converter on. That's about it. And I got to take care of the wife. She's complaining about something. And she spilled something, so I got to clean it up. But you answered my question, Dick. I guess it make all the old TVs useless. K2RIW, WB2CUK.
Yeah, Bill, they will be useless until you put a digital to analog converter box in front of them, which is what those two coupons you already have. WB2BXO, Frank, go right ahead.
Yeah, this frequency issue is one that I've heard a lot of confusion on, as somebody very knowledgeable told me that they thought what was going to happen with channel 2 through 13 is those frequencies were simply going to be used, continued to be used by the broadcasters, but in the digital mode. And I had the same impression you did, and that they were going to be on entirely different, the digital transmissions were going to be entirely an entirely different frequency. And in fact, there is right now, as I understand it, a channel 2 analog and a channel 2 HD and a WNBC analog, WNBC HD, with a number of subcarriers, I think 4.1 through 4.4, for example, that those are actually on different frequencies already. So I was wondering if you could clarify already, if I remember correctly, I think either had or know some people who had done consulting in this area at one point. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you start Googling high-def television and digital TV, you'll find an awful lot of information about this. You take, for instance, Channel 21, our local PBS channel, which I think is also using Channel 22 for their digital transmission, and they've got two or three channels of digital being transmitted. two or three program channels are squeezed into that one channel. But I think about digital is you can send two or three programs at once, all in one frequency region. To my knowledge, there's very little digital television taking place on VHF frequencies now, but there will be. And almost all of the digital television right now is on UHF channels, to my knowledge. I don't know whether or not there's any VHF channels using digital yet. VHF low or VHF high. Channels 2 through 6 are called VHF low. 7 through 13 are called VHF high. As I said, there's a number of websites that will give you quite a bit more information on this. The main expert we can all talk to locally is a LIMOC member, Eric, K-E-2-E-J, Kilo Echo 2 Echo Juliet. He is the engineer for both Channel 13 in Manhattan and Channel 21 out here on Long Island. So he has been setting up these systems for the last 8 or so years. He set up the system for digital television broadcast that was on the World Trade Center, and I think it was in operation 2 whole weeks. The whole crew at Channel 13 in New York City was up on top of the World Trade Center, standing alongside of the main mast, taking a picture 2 weeks ahead of 9/11. 2 weeks later, all of that hardware disappeared into a whole lot of smoke and rubble. Poor old Eric had to do it all over again. Anyone with any further questions or comments, give me a call at us right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Anyone else? You got it, Mel.
Node number 4148. Link active.
IRLC's back account. Okay, anyhow, Dick, got a circular that came around, and instead of your using a regular outdoor antenna to receive right now your programming, you have to replace that antenna. You can also will be able to continue receiving channels 2 through 13 in digital, but you need a new digital outside antenna. And they're offering a deal right now. I don't know, $175 to take down your TV antenna that you have up there now and put up a new digital TV antenna. I'm wondering what the heck that's all about, over.
I'm guessing that 95% of that is a scam, Mel, because 8 outdoor aerial, a rooftop aerial antenna that was capable of working on channels 2 through 13, and maybe you've already got a dual antenna that works on UHF also, I see very little reason why it shouldn't continue to work on digital television. I will admit that you can probably buy a more sophisticated antenna intended for digital television reception, which there have been versions engineered and experimented with which have electronic steering within the antenna. So that, in other words, the right kind of sophisticated box down below gives commands to the antenna up above, which does some electronic steering in order to choose the direction of reception that gives you the least amount of multipath or the least amount of spike reception or whatever. Let me drop for a second. And as such, you could get superior reception. However, the fourth and fifth generation converting boxes have an equalizer built in, which can tolerate a significant number of multipath signals that have up to plus and minus 70 microseconds of delay or advance. In other words, there's a great big shift register compensating network built into the modern day converter box, or let's call it digital television down converter, which by way of multiple taps on a delay line, where it can adjust the amplitude and the phase angle of the tap, it can take a multipath signal situation, combine it in such a way, compensate it in such a way that it looks like one clean signal. It subtracts and adds the right time delays to those other signals, if you know what I mean. Very sophisticated system. So as such, because of the fourth and fifth generation digital TV reception box, because of its capability, I don't think you need electronic steering of the antenna to null out the direction of multipath. I think the system has become essentially invulnerable to multipath. Now, there may be still some remaining vulnerability to the spiky noise that can come out of power line wiring that's having arc over insulators. The person who joined us, I wonder if that was possibly Eric. If so, I'd certainly like to hear from him. K2RIW and the TechNet listening. Okay, on the input, I heard Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta. Maybe your PL tone is not turned on, because I'm hearing you on the input, but you did not come through the output. So if your PL is not turned on, you might want to turn it on. If not, I'll simply repeat everything you say. Start off with your name, sir. I think I know you already.
I just had some, I was on here, I guess a while back, giving some information on HD television. I've got a receive set up here, have some information about the VHF broadcast right now. I think channel 8 in Connecticut is broadcasting on channel 10. Did a little DXing last night, picked up Boston, WGBH. I can get another rig on here with PL, but I'll be at a lower power level. K2RIW from KD2BD.
Very fine, KD2BD. I've forgotten your name. As you talk to us, the first 10 seconds of your conversation does not come through the repeater, and then the rest of what you say does come through the repeater. So there's some kind of a crazy delay network going on. So go ahead and give us all that information about Channel 8. Has moved up digitally to Channel 10. You said you were doing some DXing with Boston. So bear in mind that for the first 5 or 10 seconds, we won't hear you coming through the machine. After that, I think people will hear you. KD2BD, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Till November, wait a couple of seconds. As you mentioned earlier, the majority of the New York City stations are transmitting on UHF channels right now. Some of them will be moving to high VHF after the conversion date. Let's see. Channel 2, WCBS, will remain on UHF. They're right now on channel 56. They will be going to channel 33. Channel 11, WPIX, is currently on channel 33. After the switchover, they will be going back to channel 11. WNET, channel 13, is on channel 61. They will be moving back to channel 13. WABC television, channel 7, is on channel 45. They will be moving back to channel 7. WNYW, channel 5, is on channel 44. They will be remaining on channel 44. WNBC TV, channel 4, is on channel 28. They will be remaining on 28. And I mentioned WTNH, channel 8 in Connecticut, which I've been picking up the past couple of nights due to band openings. They are currently transmitting on channel 10. And I believe they're going to be remaining on channel 10 because I believe WNJD, a New Jersey Network affiliate, will be transmitting from the Empire State Building on channel 8. They right now are on channel 8 at much lower power from a transmitter in New Jersey. So see how you copy. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Very good, John. All that came through very nicely. You delayed for just the right amount of time until your audio came through the machine, and we heard all of your frequencies now, what will be, and what they're going to go back to when all analog television, essentially all analog television, ceases to exist. To your knowledge, John, is there a website that makes this clear, or did you find it out by television DXing, so to speak? Sounds like you are a television DXer. I bet you're one of these guys that dreaming about having a 100-foot tower, a high-gain Yagi antenna, a rotator, and watching television from long distances. So to your knowledge, once again, is there a website that gives us information, or did you have to find it out the hard way? KD2BD, K2RIW on the TechNet.
They're operating on the power level, the antenna locations, antenna patterns, things like that. So the FCC website has that information. If you dig a little deeper on the net, you might find a document entitled something like DTV final assignment or final channel allocations, something along those lines. That will give you the final, the current and the final channels, because as you mentioned earlier, it's channels 52 through 69 that are going to be vacated. So all the DTV will be channel 51 and below. And there are some areas that will be using lower VHF. In Philadelphia, channel 6, WPVI television, which is right now on channel 64, will be moving back to their analog channel 6. That should be interesting. So that's basically how I found that out. Yeah, it would be nice to have a nice tower to do this sort of stuff. Height is everything, of course, and right now I have nothing even close to that, but the signals are I'm in a fairly good location to aim north. West and southwest a little bit more difficult due to terrain, but I'm 50 miles, about 52 miles, I believe, or 45 miles south of the Empire State Building. K2RW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Good information, John. John, I am kind of curious. I presume you're using a relatively low antenna, in other words, something that's rooftop mounted. Maybe you do or don't have a rotator. What is the greatest distance at which you have already received a digital television? I hear conflicting reports. There are some people who think that digital television has considerably greater range. There are people who think that digital television has less range. I think one of the big variables is how good is your particular compensating network and your particular digital television converter. The more modern ones can tolerate a greater number of multipath signals with greater delay and amplitude differences between them. So how modern do you believe is your digital converter? Where'd you get it? How many dollars? And what have you seen DX-wise? And when you talk about DX-wise, obviously television will sometimes come into your backyard from 1,200 miles away when you have a band opening. That's not quite what I'm asking about. On a typical propagation day, what's your guess as to the range a rooftop antenna can give digital television reception to? How many miles, if that's what you're using? Back to you, John. And once again, wait for that delay a little bit. KD2BD, K2LIW on the TechNet.
From KD2BD. Let's see. Yeah, I had mentioned this, I think, in an earlier TechNet. The digital tuner I'm using is a Pro Brand Model 3150 Plus, purchased at Circuit City almost 2 years ago for, I believe, in the vicinity of $200, $249, I believe it was. The antenna I'm using is a 4-bay stacked bow tie array in front of a reflecting screen. It's a WineGuard model KU420, which I don't believe exists anymore, but is a very popular design. It's duplicated by many different manufacturers. There are some folks who even homebrew their own versions of this particular antenna. It is four essentially V dipoles that are about one wavelength, tip to tip, stacked on top of one another vertically, fit in the center with a 300 ohm to 75 ohm balun, and that feeds a homebrew preamp, actually two homebrew preamp and then another home-built preamplifier, which is a two-stage job, which comes after that. Best DX, normally, well, I get pretty much all the New York City stations. Channel 13 being on channel 61 is a bit tough because they're operating at lower power than is normal. I believe the reasoning behind that is because I think there's a channel 61 in Connecticut. And there's a lot of this issue right now with with the DTV signals being lower power than normal, or where they will finally be, because there's interference issues between existing analog stations that are still on the air. It's kind of hard to do DXing right now because there's always this issue of an analog station 200 or 300 miles away coming in and clobbering a more local DTV signal. The past few evenings we've had band openings. I've had difficulty picking up channel 4 on channel 28 because there's another channel 28 farther north, an analog signal which was clobbering it and just totally takes the signal right out. I mentioned earlier WGBH in Boston on channel 19 was coming through fairly well last night. Let's see. Oh, yes. Talking about the difference between analog and digital ranges. I believe eventually when everything is hammered out, the ranges should be the same as what they're getting now. So I would imagine a rooftop antenna, again, it deals with it, it's really a matter of terrain, but I would say 50 miles is probably not too far out of the question. One example, channel 47, I believe the analog is off the repeater.
Time out. Cancel.
You only lost the last 10 seconds because you went beyond the 2 or 3 minute timer, whatever it is, John. Good information. So, looks like you're fairly sure that the range of digital television and current analog television is going to be about the same. Your particular converter, which cost you $249 from Circuit City, Pro Brand 3150 Plus, I think you called it. To your knowledge, is that one still being manufactured? And did the brochure that come with it or anything else you were able to find out tell you what generation of compensating network is built into it? In other words, how many multipath signals of how much microseconds of delay in advance can it accommodate, if you happen to know? Back to you, John. And you have to set the repeater. Every 2 minutes, you have to let the carrier drop.
E2RAW and the TechNet from KB2BD. Got a little carried away and a little long with it. Let's see. Wait a couple of seconds. I don't know. I don't know what the generation equalizer is in that particular unit. I have no idea. That question was in my mind when I purchased this unit, but I really haven't dug into it too deeply, but I don't know where I would even find that information out. I made that buying decision based on the fact that I did some searching on the net. I found some people who had owned that unit and had previously owned, I think, a Samsung unit, which is very popular at the time, and a lot of the comments were that this particular unit was more sensitive. I had better performance, et cetera, et cetera. So I went with this particular unit. I thought it would be neat to get into it at a fairly early stage. And one of the reasons why I got into it is because I have a handheld scanner, FM-AM receiver, that tunes to the UHF and VHF ranges. And I put it into wideband mode on some of these digital signals. And even with the little whip antenna on the scanner, I can hear hash sound, it breaks the squelch and the S-meter moves on the front panel display. And then I can, for weaker signals, I could put it on narrowband FM mode and tune 310 kilohertz above the low end of the channel and pick up the pilot carrier. So between those two methods of reception, I was able to gauge what kind of signal strength I'm getting, and the signals were obviously there. So it's kind of annoying when a signal is there and you can't actually make use of it or see it or, hear it. So I broke down and got the unit, and it's not actually a converter. It's a full-fledged receiver. It has multiple video outputs, multiple audio outputs on the back of it. It even has an audio output, which is an optical connector, if you can believe that. Hopefully it will not be obsolete anytime soon. I don't know if it's still manufactured. I haven't looked into this very much. I also remember seeing it in the Sky Vision catalog, the same company that manufactures satellite television reception items. K2RW and the TechNet, Oh, one last thing. Channel 11 is also transmitting on channel 12 right now. I think they have a low power signal on channel 12 from the Empire State Building. So that's another example of high VHF being used for DTV right now. K2REW and a TechNet from KD2BD.
Very fine, John. Good information again. You've got that converter box for $249, which comes, it's not a, just a converter box, it's a complete receiver, but it comes out with video information. Out of curiosity, are you displaying that on an ordinary television set or on a high-def, what would you call it now, video display device of some kind? Back to you, John. And you don't have to wait for the delay anymore. I figured out how that works.
Yeah, I am watching it in standard, on a standard definition set. A couple of options with that. This particular unit has a zoom mode, which takes the 16:9 image and zooms into the center of it and fills the 4:3 viewing area of a standard definition television. So I could switch modes and put it into 16:9 and get a letterbox format, but I normally keep it in the zoom mode, and so I cut a little bit off the left edge, a little bit off the right edge. It's not too big of a deal. Sometimes when a PBS program is running credits, sometimes some of the text on the left-hand side is cut off, but I don't sweat that too much. It has a whole slew of video outputs, a whole slew of audio outputs, so I'm taking a standard NTSC video out of that particular unit. It has some digital audio, digital video outputs. There's two different modes that could operate in. And then there's an HDMI connector on the back, which would eventually go into something like a high-definition monitor to display video and audio coming out of that single connector simultaneously. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Again, some darn good information. So you're displaying it on an ordinary set. You haven't flipped over yet to a high-def set. And some of these capabilities you've got where it can zoom in and zoom out and whatever. And you're displaying it always at 525 scan lines. So there must be a mode you can select where it'll go to the higher number of scan line modes. So I'm guessing that that's also selectable. I'd like to also believe that a complete TV set you buy these days has a number of these options built into it. Or do you think by the modular approach that you've taken that you have a few more options than the average person has? What's your take on that one, John? KD2BD, K2RIW.
W in the TechNet from KD2BD. I think I do have more options than I would get from a regular TV set because I can take NTSC video and stereo audio out of this unit. I don't know if you can really do that with every television set that's out there. I haven't really looked at what the digital television, I should say televisions with digital tuners are capable of. But this one I could, you know, it's a little bit more experimental for a technical guy to be able to play around with in that sense. Yes, there's a switch in the back that switches the output video from a 480, I think it's 480p to 720p to 1080i. I think all those modes are available. They come out probably the digital video outputs and the HDMI output. The video output that I'm using is standard NTSC regardless of what mode I put it in. And I'll mention one other thing about the, you know, you mentioned earlier about the sub-channels that stations are transmitting. They do a lot of compression on those sub-channels, and I can tell you, with all honesty, the quality of that video on a lot of those sub-channels that are not quote-unquote high definition, in my opinion, are vastly inferior to NTSC standards. Some of it I would look at and say, that's not even broadcast standard. It's just, you get used to it after a while, and I guess it's really not that critical, but it's not as good as NTSC right now. And I guess that's just one of the things that we'll eventually get used to. High def is good. The standard definition really isn't that great. I'll give you an example. Channel 25 in New York. Your analog is on Empire State Building. Your digital transmitter is fairly new. It's from Fort Times Square. And they're transmitting their analog Channel 25 on Channel 24. They have a sub-channel, which is a traffic channel. They're showing, you know, traffic scenes. They have graphics on those screens. There's video buzz. The quality is horrible. The regular retransmission, the digital transmissions they're making of Channel 25 really isn't that sharp. It kind of looks like it's out of focus. It's not as sharp as it could be. It's not as sharp as their analog transmission is at the present time. K2RAW in the TechNet from KD2BB.
QIQ with comment.
QIQ recognized. And I have two further questions for John. Glenn, go right ahead.
I was recognizing a lot of the same things that he was noticing, and I was able to clear up some of that. And basically what I found out was some of it was initially it started off with a regular VHF antenna, and I had the VHF section and the UHF section tied together the way it normally is. Then I broke off the mod periodic half and just used the Yagi section of the Yagi part of the antenna for the receiver. And then I wound up changing the coax coming down to RG6U and then put a 10 dB amplifier in front of the antenna, all of which cleaned up a lot of things. What I noticed was the biggest difference with the cloudiness on the sub-channel is mainly due to the coax. For some reason, there's something that upsets the digital receiver, where it's used like regular 59U or some other thinner coax. But if you use the high quality grade RG6U, it seems to straighten that out. And then the pictures, they're not high definition on the other channels, but using the HDMI output into my widescreen TV, they look just as good as regular broadcast K2RAW, K2RAW, K2RAW.
Don, interesting, Glenn. How did you know that changing the cable would make an improvement in the resolution of the highly compressed audio video signal?
So I've been studying a few things, brushing up on my broadcast engineering stuff, because I was actually looking at a possible job at one of the broadcast companies in the city, and I was looking at some of the router, 1.5 gigahertz routers, and some of the way the digital signals are being fed back and forth, and some of the problems related to it. And it led me to suspect that in the receive path, if you're trying to receive the digital signal, that the shorter the coaxial length, and make sure that there are no abnormalities, should I say, inside the coax, so that the velocity is very constant, the cable coming down, and the connectors are good right into the back of the set, you're probably going to have less problems with digital television in that area.
Up till now, I thought that digital television has an extremely sharp threshold of either reception or non-reception. And now you're describing a kind of intermediate condition in which a picture can become fuzzy if there are perturbations in the cable or signal-to-noise ratio problems in the cable. And by going over to RG6 SAT, a higher quality version of an RG59-like cable, but the 6, I think, is a little bit larger in diameter, a little bit better foam dielectric, a little bit lower insertion loss, literally intended for 950 to 1450 megacycle IF output of a block-down converter for digital television, for direct broadcast television, satellite television, I'm trying to say. So that works better. Interesting information. The two questions I got for you, John, if you're still there, are number one, how big is the set that you're watching this on? I presume it's a more conventional cathode ray tube set, maybe 32-inch. And number two, converter of yours, what's the model number, 3150 Plus, that you said is also sold by Sky Vision, as well as Circuit City. Do you believe Sky Vision was selling it at a very similar price, or maybe a little bit better? KD2BD, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KD2BD. Last year, Sky Vision's price was about $30 higher than I purchased the unit at Circuit City. so I went to Circuit City. I'm watching on a 25-inch diagonal CRT television, and regarding the quality of standard definition digital broadcast, I have it on good authority that one of the channels I mentioned earlier is intentionally running a low bit rate, and I don't know why, and no one seems to be able to answer that question. But the quality of the image is due to the fact that they are just running a low bit rate. And I think in some of these situations, it's an issue where their video source is NTSC. It's not a digital format. And so it's never going to be any better than their source. And so if they feel that their source isn't that great, then they will transmit it at a lower bit rate, and you just won't get it as clear as maybe you could on an NTSC signal, because some of the channels that are really compressed might look okay until there's motion, and then you see all the artifacts. And one of the things that they say is, try to look at a scene with running water and see what that looks like. You'd be surprised how often that happens on PBS channels. You get a kick out of that when that happens. And just one last comment about, because some folks are interested in what kind of antenna they're going to be needing. For the New York City area, it's going to be something that can cover the high VHF channels and the UHF channels. And by UHF, I'm talking about up to channel 51. It won't be anything any higher than that. Some UHF television antennas were specifically manufactured in the past to have a higher gain on the higher channels. And, you know, the old days, channel 70, and that region. And I think one of the reasons behind that is because years ago, very high UHF channels were used for translator broadcasts, and which typically ran low power. So they try to peak up the gain a little bit on the high end and kind of accommodate that sort of thing. So what we need now is actually more gain on the lower end and some good front-to-back ratio so that you don't get to minimize the multipath situation. K2RW in the TechNet from KD2BD.
Thank you very much, John. One last question, John, where Glenn was telling us that when he switched over to a higher quality cable, which had less perturbations and less insertion loss, that when he watched a channel that had compressed video, he saw a higher definition of that compressed video. I wonder if you've ever seen anything like that with your experiments, John. KD2BD, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Haven't. Not at all. I believe most, if not all, DTV tuners have an S-meter, quote-unquote S-meter, some sort of a display that provides signal-to-noise ratio information, basically giving you the quality or the bit error rate of the signal that you're receiving. And I would think that if it's a transmission line issue, if you've got high SWR on your transmission lines, that are causing ghosting or reflections, that would affect the signal-to-noise ratio or the bit quality that the receiver would then display on a test meter. Anything over about 15.4 dB signal-to-noise ratio and the signal is solid. It's just when it dips below that it just goes away completely. And anything above 15.4 really doesn't make any difference. You can make it very, you know, and if there's an issue of signal strength or signal-to-noise ratio or standing wave conditions on the transmission line, that, to me, I simply think would show up in that S-meter reading. And if you're above the threshold, I think you're going to get it. And if you're kind of wavering on it, then you'll get occasional breakups and pixelations and things like that. But what I'm seeing is not that at all. The signal is solid. It's well above the threshold. It just doesn't look very sharp, not compared to other channels with the same or even lower signal-to-noise ratio. K2RW, the TechNet from KD2BD.
Yeah, I had another question along those lines. Oh, yeah, 15.4 dB of signal-to-noise ratio, or maybe it's carrier-to-noise ratio. Is there a meter on the front panel of the converter box? What is that model number again? 3150 plus. Is there a meter on the front panel that is an RSSI, receiver signal strength indicator, or is there a mode of operation in which it displays signal strength on the screen of your monitor? Is is the main thing I'm asking. And second of all, have you seen that there's only a fraction of a decibel of difference between good signal and no signal? I've heard people say that if I put it into numbers, what I've been hearing from what you've just told me, 15.4 would be a beautiful picture, and 14.9 would be no picture at all. Very sharp threshold in between the two, so to speak, is what I've heard. A fraction of a dB of difference between nothing and perfect. I wonder if you've seen something like that. So that and where is the signal strength indicator on your machine? KD2BD, K2LIW in the TechNet.
RIW in the TechNet from KD2BD. There is a button on the remote called meter. You press that button and a graphic pops up with the bar graph. It shows, in numeric form, it shows the signal-to-noise ratio. And it also shows some arbitrary number, I guess 0 to 100, which supposedly is telling you the quality of the signal. I mostly go by the dB figure because I know, in theory, you need 15.4. My unit seems to be, I don't know, 15.6, I don't know. That measurement updates every couple of weeks. So under real-world conditions, there's always going to be a little airplane flutter. There's always going to be a little bit of variation in signal-to-noise ratio between those measurement periods. So the number jumps, you know, from one number to another number. Then a couple of seconds comes down again and then goes up again a little bit. So there's always a little bit of variation in there. But if it isn't hitting that threshold, you get nothing. And if it just hits it sporadically, maybe you'll get just like a freeze frame of an image, maybe with some pixels kind of messed up. Kind of interesting. One of the things I've been trying to do before the cutover takes place next year is try to become accustomed to interference issues. Try to acclimate myself to what the picture looks like and what the interference issue is. Because you could always do that with analog television. You could tell right away whether it's an impulse noise or whether it's an interference due to a carrier. You could tell whether it's AM or FM just by looking at the herringbone pattern. You can't do that at all with a digital tuner. So kind of getting acclimated to what lightning looks like. It's just like sporadic pixels will be messed up all around the picture, and then it'll clear right up. Co-channel interference or interference from another carrier source does other things. So it's not easy, but I'm starting to get accustomed to that and trying to be able to be a detective. K2RIW and the TechNet.
I'm very interested in the fact that you've been comparing analog television reception and distortions from co-channel and whatever, lightning and probably impulse noise versus digital reception. John, have you ever seen an episode where your analog television on a nearby channel is showing the two white bars that drift across the screen because you're getting a breakdown of a nearby insulator on your power line for your neighborhood versus digital television reception, which is above the 15.4 dB of signal-to-noise ratio, but because of the spiky noise of the power line interference, digital television did not take place. Have you ever seen an episode, anything like that, John? KD2BD, K2RIW in the TechNet.
RIW in the TechNet from KD2BD. When the weather gets cold, dry, and windy, the power line noise is horrendous. 20 megahertz on up, it's horrendous. That pretty much destroys analog channel 2, 4, and maybe not that much 5, but 2 and 4 really get clobbered. I have not seen, I've not had any issues, well, I believe any issues, even on the noisiest evening on a DTV reception. And part of that's probably due to the fact that what I'm receiving now is primarily on UHF, so the noise is a lot less amplitude at those frequencies. K2RIW on the TechNet from KD2BD.
Beautiful. You anticipated exactly what I was going to say. because the impulse noise you get on power lines on a dry day has a finite rise time to it, it falls off 6 dB per octave. That's the reason why 2 gets clobbered, 4 is a little bit better, 5 is a whole lot better, 7 is gone on over-the-air broadcast. And since essentially all of your digital television reception has been UHF, it's way up at the region where the 6 dB per octave has allowed it to fall off, and there's no real power line noise up there. However, when the day comes when some of the VHF low and VHF high channels are going to be used, particularly VHF low, I think local power line noise could be a detriment. I've been reading some reports about experiments that were done on digital television in Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Worth, Texas, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Diego, New York City, and so on. On the one or two times that they were testing a channel, and the lowest channel they tested was 6, it did appear that local impulse noise could create a fair amount of grief to digital television reception. The nature of the digital television, the highly compressed, digitized 8VSB signal, the good news is that it can pack a lot of information in 6 megacycles of bandwidth. The bad news is that I think it is more vulnerable to impulse noise. And I'm not sure that there is enough error-correcting code built into it to compensate for the time-domain dropouts that creates. That's my belief. You may or may not have an opinion on that one, John. I'll pass it back to you for that one. KD2BD, K2RIW in the TechNet.
RIW and the TechNet from KD2BD. I don't know how well a noise blanker would work in a situation like that. And I can understand that the signal is demodulated in a fairly complex manner. I imagine it's IQ demodulators in the tuner. One of the neat things you can do if you're demodulating a fairly simple signal, like an AM signal, amplitude modulated signal, is to use an I and a Q demodulator, and out of your I demodulator you'll get a reproduction of the audio plus any noise, and out of the Q demodulator you will get noise only and frequency information if you want to do some automatic frequency control. But it's kind of neat to be able to demodulate a signal like that in a situation where you can literally separate the signal plus the noise and have another channel that's only noise, and you can use that other channel for noise blanking purposes. I've actually done that on LF frequencies. It's kind of neat. I believe it might have been last week, it was a gentleman who asked a question about frequency tolerance for DTV transmissions. I don't know if they're any better than NTSC transmissions, but one of the things I've learned is that when a DTV station is on the air and it's adjacent to their analog NTSC transmission, like for example channel 21 in Long Island, it's analog on 21, it's digital on 22, I think in that situation the frequency carrier have to be kept to pretty high standards. If they're not kept very accurately, there's some kind of an interference issue between the two. But that's all I know. I heard that from an engineer. I don't know what how many parts per million or whatever the accuracy of those carriers are supposed to be. But you can pretty easily find the DTV pilot carrier, and if it's a station like 21 where it is adjacent to a DTV, you can measure the difference between the video carrier of the analog and the pilot carrier of the DTV signal, and they should be within, I guess, a several hertz of one another. QRW and a TechNet from KD2BD.
W2YY.
Joe recognized, and I got one further question here for John. John, if that frequency accuracy between two adjacent channels, the video carrier frequency and the pilot tone of the digital on the adjacent channel, if that frequency accuracy is not maintained, but if the digital demodulator was able to find that pilot and properly adjust itself, let's assume now that the digital channel was exactly the right frequency, but the adjacent analog channel was off on frequency. I think you're saying that would create a kind of cross-channel interference that the digital television converter might not be able to tolerate. Is that what you were saying, John? KD2BD, K2LIW?
My impression, maybe it goes the other way around in certain circumstances. Maybe there's an issue where, although it seems kind of it seems a little unlikely, but I understand there is some kind of an interference issue. I don't know if it's from analog to digital or digital analog, but I think it's probably more of a situation of analog interfering with digital. Over.
Okay, interesting. Joe, go right ahead.
Good evening, Dick. Dick Waller, Watch checking in here. And I do have a question about the frequency tolerance, and I am the one that asked the question about that last week. You said that you didn't know precisely about the frequency tolerance. I did some measurements of what I can see off the air with a spectrum analyzer, and I did get some variations.
Okay, go right ahead. Tell us what you found. And you might want to turn down the audio a little bit in the background, the echo you're creating.
Is that annoying to you?
I can tolerate it, but there are people who are going to get unhappy about that.
All right, it's easy to get stepped on. From the RLT, 2 meters has priority over it. I was trying to break in a couple of them many, many times, and I finally was able to break in. Your two repeaters aren't tied to each other, so it's hard to get it in here on the IRLP. Let's see, what did I measure here? I can see a DTB channel, probably is equivalent to channel 22. 518 is 524 in that block. I see it's 518.3321. The carrier I measure, that pilot carrier, is minus 10 hertz. The next one I could see coming up is in the 524 to 530 block. I see that one at 524.3094 plus 30 hertz. Now, the next one I found I could see with the analyzer is in the same format, 728 to 734. That power carrier is 728.3094, and that one is minus 30 hertz. So what do I believe is on frequency?
Yep, I see what you're saying. Plus or minus 30 hertz. Minus 10 hertz, plus 30 hertz, minus 30 hertz. And what is the real accuracy requirement? For all we know, it's 100 hertz or something like that. I haven't read the specs as to what frequency accuracy FCC has dictated, but since all modern-day tuners can easily accommodate quite a bit of AFC, ALC, what am I looking for here now? AGC, no, AFC I would call it, or phase lock loop, I don't think it represents a problem. What do I know? Do you have a digital television tuner at this time, Joe? And are you thinking of getting one? The B2LYY, K2LIW?
No, I don't have a DTV digital television tuner. And I'm not asking these questions to be able to watch TV. And I'm sure 30 hertz wouldn't make any difference at the frequencies I'm talking about. I'm asking these questions to find out if there's a way I can use this as a frequency standard source besides WWV, which has fading and other characteristics that make it difficult to use as a, you know, to something to set your equipment by. That's why I'm asking these questions.
Okay. When you're watching a network locked program, ABC, NBC, CBS, as opposed to a local channel reproduction, I have been told that the chrominant subcarrier, 3.579545, is locked to the National Bureau of Standards. I'll admit that crazy frequency is a little bit hard to live with. I once found a combination where you multiply that by some fixed number and take the 10 meg oscillator and multiply it by some other fixed number, that the two come out the same. And therefore, you could use it as a frequency reference. Or correspondingly, you could just measure the frequency of the chrominant subcarrier. Well, I can see how that's a little bit of a problem because the chrominant subcarrier in the broadcast is a suppressed carrier. However, your television set that's watching that program, by definition, the 8 hertz burst that takes place on each horizontal retrace time must phase lock your local oscillator, 3.5 chrominant subcarrier demodulating oscillator in your television receiver must phase lock itself to that particular signal in order for you to get proper color rendition. Otherwise, as I said before, Jay Leno's face would turn green. So therefore, if you're measuring the frequency of your chrominant subcarrier that's in your television receiver, you could therefore use it as a frequency standard. Now, maybe your particular counter doesn't like measuring that particular number. I wonder if you've given that some thought, Joe. I'm A2RYY and K2RIW in the tech net.
No, I haven't tried measuring like that. You're not directly answering my question. We're really looking at the frequency tolerance. If you look at these carriers on the air, that's what I'm really the kind of information I'm trying to find out. I understand the color subcarrier 3.5, yada, 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 okay, as far as frequency tolerance away from the video carrier. But the whole thing is in reference to the video carrier. Now, if that's plus or minus a certain tolerance where it's supposed to be, how do you know it's right or wrong, or your equipment you're measuring with is right or wrong? You don't know that unless somebody told you that that frequency is supposed to be on this particular operating frequency.
Okay, the way guys have gotten around that one, Joe, is they set up a system, I'm not quite sure how they did it, which literally measured the frequency difference between the video carrier and the chrominant subcarrier phase-locked oscillator of their television receiver. In other words, they measured the 3.579545 megacycle offset. They didn't measure the absolute frequency of the chrominant subcarrier. They measured the offset from the video carrier. And I was told that that is exact, traceable to the rubidium standard of the cesium beam standard at the NBS. Now back to you, Joe. I stand by a minute, Joe. I'm hearing John saying something. John, go ahead with that one.
K2REW and TechNet from KD2BD. If the gentleman can copy or measure some AM radio stations in the area, there are a few of them that are locked to GPS standards, WCBS being one, WSAN being another, and there's WWRU, I believe it is, on 1660. I've measured all three to within a fraction of one part per billion and found that they were right on the nose. K2RW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Hey, Joe, that sounds awful good. Joe, I'm going to stand by and see if you got that and made sense out of it.
Well, it did make sense. The problem is my measuring equipment can measure and tell me within one hertz what I'm seeing those carriers to be. You multiply that error up about 100 times or 500 times, your error starts wandering a little bit if you want to get precision out of your equipment. I thought if you measured something that was much higher in frequency, like something up in the UHF region, and you knew it was to be within one hertz of its assigned frequency or very close thereof, it would make things a lot easier to try to measure something very high in frequency instead of something very low in frequency.
Okay, Joe, I see what you're saying. In your case, with the kind of precision you're looking for, cell site used to have that kind of precision, so you could measure cell site signals. And other than that, the smart guys on the microwave reflector have been sending all kinds of messages back and forth for the last 2 years about disciplining their reference oscillator, whether it be 5 megs, 10 megs, 20 megs, or 100 megs, by using global positioning satellite receiver at 15,750 megacycles. That's a nice high frequency, and that one is directly traceable to the Bureau. So, and there are, among the guys who are passing surplus information, surplus purchasing information back and forth, there are some rather inexpensive sources of a global positioning satellite receiver. If you don't need all the horns and whistles, some of these guys are able to buy a completely operating system for $50. Back to you, Joe.